very different from Colon Bay. What I wanted to mention at the beginning, I was a faculty resident, and in those days they were hesitant to call us that, so I was called a faculty, or I was called a resident tutor. I lived in Colon Bay for 4 years when we were at where now Whitman House was located. Now there's a lot of cute stories, I'll try to make it short tonight, but the prettiness about that is that that was the Delt House. And the then dean of counseling, Bill Leland, when we had that fast that summer of 69, or the spring of 69, and the Delts were kicked off campus for whatever outrageous things they were doing, that was presented to us as an option, which is why we ended up in the Cala cluster. Happened that the university had terrible relationships with their dean of students, so they kicked out one of the guys, and the acting dean of students, who's now the vice president for public affairs, Robert Freeland, lived in the Cala cluster with us. We had certain graduate students who hung around with us. One was a man named Norm Robinson. Another was a guy named Larry Horton. And Bob Freeland. These are all guys still here. We did some things that actually turned out to be very helpful. And this may be information that's useful to you. Since the university had never thought of a co-op as we conceived it, there were no ground rules in those days. Absolutely none. So we were in the beautiful position of taking initiatives, and the university was the reactor instead of the reverse. From the very beginning, after some discussion over the summer, when we decided not to have anybody on staff in terms of cleaning, cooking, and so on, we negotiated right away with the university that we would have the house as a whole pay. So for the first couple of years, we didn't pay individual rent. We paid the rent the way fraternity houses used to be able to pay rent, which was as a whole, which allowed us to rent the physical facility and do a variety of things in it as long as they were legal. This is why when you read some of those blurbs, at least taking the time to find, you see that there were a number of activities we had. Have any of you been to Whitman House? Well, any of those tall clusters? You know, you can open up the kitchen area, that is the dining room area, then they got this hallway and then the lounge area. What we did was we opened it up for dance for little kids at a preschool. So what we wanted to do, one of the initial things we wanted to do is cut down the ageism rampant in a university where you never saw little kids and you never saw old people and so on. So we had it as a dance studio. And we had a variety of projects that we wanted to involve ourselves with. One of the things that might be useful for you to think about is, because it became a problem right from the very beginning and I thought I'd chat a bit about it, is to figure out the difference between believing in something and being a theme house. And right from the very beginning, we had to confront that with the university, is that the Colon Bay was an experiment in studying, living, and practicing on a number of approaches to nonviolence. It was not set up as a belief system that people had to buy into. Just like if you have an Italian house, you're not supposed to believe in Italians. You live there because you want to experiment, live, and study that. So that's one of the things that was always confusing as Colon Bay got further away from its beginnings, is that people thought it was something you had to believe in, as compared to it being an opportunity to explore certain things that you can make your decision on over time. And it was really quite a different thing. Mm. The other was that you mentioned earlier about a culture, that Colon Bay was set up to be a context in which certain things would have relevancy, where in other places the same things wouldn't have the same relevancy. So there are a hell of a lot of people around campus who speak Italian. And Italian is no big deal. But if you happen to have a house where people are studying Italian, speaking Italian, in that context, makes it part of why it's a theme house. And I would suggest that you all think about that. That is, rather than having silly little debates about pieces, try to remind yourselves, if it's real, and it may not be real anymore, but if it is real, that a number of things you're talking to with the administration have significance because of the context they're in, not abstractly. So that another place that has cooperative cooking may not have the same significance when you try to put it in the frame of reference of a social experiment called nonviolence in the various ways. So that some of the things you do that people say, well, shit, other people do that. Well, other people talk Italian, too. There are a lot of people who paint, a lot of people dance. But if you set up a house where you're trying to develop a culture, where over a period of time there's some level of integration, then the particular events that in some other place is not so important, here develops importance. And given my discussion with you, I would re-emphasize that you think about the various things that you're doing and have been doing for a long time. Do you still have the washers and dryers? Are they owned by the house still?
His washer, mm-hmm. The dryer.
I mean, these were things that the university had never thought of before that we simply said we were going to do. We bought washers and dryers. And they said, well, who owns it? And we say, well, as a community, we own it. well, you know, who takes it at the end of the year? Well, we're going to leave it to the next people. Well, why are you going to do that? And we said, because we understand, even economically, that we'll have all saved enough money so that nobody has to take it.
Hmm.
The other thing is that we were the first house, and I don't say this in a glowing fashion, I just simply say it as a fact, that negotiated with the university to simply buy things from the university stores the way any other institution within the university would. So we became part of the contracting relationship as an entity, so we bought from the stores. We
kinds of things just to run the house?
Yeah, right. And the university facilitated us. It was a man who was, one man had been in the Marines, and I don't know what Alan Cummings' background was, or maybe the Navy. The two guys who ran that operation, who ran stores and who ran physical facilities, were both Army people. And they were always helpful to us, because we were the only house that did everything the way they wanted it done. That is, we never had any problem with cleanings during the holidays. People didn't break windows. We did all the things, and they got the rent on time as a whole unit. Now, the experimental part was that we wanted people to be able to have some flexibility of what they could afford to be part of the house. I mentioned to Lee that in those days we had 50 people in the house. And the only reason we left and took on this house, as you know, the university spent something like $250,000 or $500,000 to move this across the street. Mm-hmm. This used to be a street, and Grove House used to be across the street, and they wanted to put it together. We moved here because we felt that running the experiment the way we were with 50 people was too many people. There was no other reason. We could have stayed there. But we chose that the theme would have difficulty with that many human beings and the transitions they were making. And I just review that as a fact here. Now, I've spoken to a number of people I've known on campus just to get refreshed myself, and there are a number of people who are very friendly to the purposes of Colum Bay who are not clear that you are a theme house anymore because they're not clear that you're experimenting anything consciously. Now, the articles, I want to reemphasize this because the articles mislead to some extent as well. Colum Bay never perceived itself in the first 4 years that we were principally active as doing something that wasn't doing something, which is the way the English talks about nonviolence. Hmm. I can't even begin to describe to you the number of world-famous people who visited us out of the 4 years that we started up. We became known internationally. We became part of various well-known systems. And we brought one of the principal heirs to the Ramdam movement in India, who had worked and lived with Gandhi for years. Dolce came to visit us. We brought a number of people who are active in the world of what we call nonviolence. And we all knew that in English it was a terrible term, because satyagraha and ahimsa and these terms that are used all represent a phenomena. They're actually descriptive of a thing that you perceive when you're doing whatever it is you're doing. It's not a description of something you're not doing. And some of the articles about how Colum Bay started because we were offended by the violence on campus and we wanted to be, that wasn't true. What was true is that students were stymied by not knowing what other things to do in relationship to that. We never ever opposed, actually, somebody else doing something else. Well, now, some of the stories, and these are the stories that Noam Robinson will remember as well, is that our initial infamy came when we decided that we would take on ROTC in what we thought would be a process of nonviolence. We would engage that group of men in a fashion that we thought, that is a process we thought would be nonviolent. So we used to go out to the field where they practice in the morning with breakfast and offered breakfast. And over a period of time, people started having breakfast with us. And then we would invite people. The reason we always had open meals is that we invited people to come and eat with us. And we invited people to see how we cook and how we work together. And people would ask us about grinding grain. And we would explain to people we ground the grain to make the flour, to make the bread, because we were at Stanford, where we needed that kind of activity to remind us of something that we wouldn't get within the context itself. So we try to convey that given our priorities, we were efficient, and that simply other people didn't understand what it was we were trying to do. And my sense is that one can call a theme house on campus here, separate from a co-op. If people agree that there is some kind of lineage you're trying to learn about, in whatever ways you want to learn about. We met with Vietnamese women. There's been a lot of change in terms of the women's movement than when we first began Colum Bay. And we were dealing with people who weren't busy calling themselves anything. people didn't call themselves feminists or non-feminists. I can't. That is the ones who came to visit us. Vietnamese and Cambodian Laotian women wouldn't even know what the women on campus were talking about when they said, well, are you a feminist? And I don't know what I am, but I can tell you what I do every day. And that helped a lot, you see, because we didn't have categories. We had substance. And it was a product of the historical times we were in. It wasn't anything that we did. And so you have a much more difficult task. I've been trying to say that to Colombe each of your freshmen or each of your years when you start, you invited me up to meet with your retreats, is you shouldn't take it lightly that this is a very, very different historical era. And therefore the context you find yourselves in is in many ways much more difficult. And therefore trying to figure out how to experiment is more difficult. But we did a number of things that led the university to consider us a theme house. We did things like we would have only one record player on a floor to find out what it would mean to have to share a rare resource, if it became rare. We decided to have people overcrowd sleeping in a certain room and use the other rooms for study areas or yoga areas and so on to see what that would be like. There was a lot of change. People always ask how we ended up with co-ed bathrooms. Well, the house talked about it, and I was teaching seminars, and I got tired of all the talk one day in my classes, so I brought finger paint. And I asked the class not to talk to the class, but they had to figure out how to paint what they wanted to talk about in class. So we did a little bit of this, did a little bit of that, and then somebody took their shirt off, and somebody else. By the time it was finished, there was paint on a lot of people. And when we were all finished, people walked in the bathrooms to wash the paint off, and all of a sudden somebody noticed that we were men and women washing the paint off together in the bathroom. And all of a sudden everyone realized we had co-ed bathrooms. You know, it wasn't any monumental decision, even though we had house meeting after house meeting, figuring out how to do it. When we finally did something, which led us to do something together, then all of a sudden it became co-ed. And then there was never any more discussion about it. And then we had to have discussion about guests who came. What were we going to do about guests? Because they hadn't been part of this frat, you know, and how would we deal with that? And it was interesting that the house always took time when it became practical. Again, that was a historical context we found ourselves in. We had more pressing things in a certain way that were visible to us. The world's no different, of course, than it was then. It's just that it doesn't have to be as visible. You're not going to get drafted, and you're not going to get raped right away, and something else is not going to happen. Where in those days, police were running into dormitories and hitting men and women, and people were getting drafted. So it was a different context. So people, you know, it's a different world. So things seemed more apparent than they do right now. But the experimental part was an agreement. That was why we were a theme house and why we were somewhat contagious to other places. So that people knew that if they wanted to try something, that the context of the house was an agreement that people could try certain things. Even if you didn't agree you wanted to try it, it was a context to affirm other people trying things. We had the same dilemmas, and in that sense, one of those articles is an accurate depiction. When Colombe participated in the closing down of all the draft boards in the Bay Area, a number of people knew they were going to feel guilty if they didn't participate because they knew we'd all go to jail. And so we had to have long discussions about the nature of community, how if we really were a community, we needed to keep certain things going as a base camp, for lack of any better term, why other things happened. So that people all needed to begin to find out where they were doing their fair share. When people understood where they were doing their fair share, then doing different things wasn't as important as knowing they were doing their fair share. It seems to me one of the breakdowns I've watched in Colombia in the last few years is there's no cohesion about fair share. There's no perception that it really doesn't matter what you do as long as you have some feel that you've communicated to others and it's making up some kind of whole that people are participating in. It seems like people feel they have to do the same thing or they have to do it in opposition to the same thing. The other is that from the very beginning we were very concerned with aesthetics. Very concerned with aesthetics. We thought we were in a culture where people were too linear, and that the fashion in which they did things was not given enough time and nurturing. As an example, I told you I always find it difficult to have a meeting and eat, and I'm watching. We didn't do that at Colombe. We agreed that if we met, we wouldn't eat. Because the amount of presence it took, if we were really going to cook the food in what we consider to be an appropriate manner, we want to talk and eat at the same time. So we did a variety of experiments, what it meant to have silent meals. But it meant to eat but slower, so everyone would agree they would be there, not run out. What would we do with guests? When we began to see that guests were somewhat awkward in some of our different experiments. What did it mean to eat with no utensils and just eat with our hands? You know, a variety of different things to experiment with some of the approaches to life we could have. we put various physical things in different areas of the house to see what it was like. The house really did change when we moved here. It was quite different. The people were a bit younger in terms of how they spent their time. I don't mean younger in age, but they were younger. There was much more sex. Sex started to change the house. Internally, we seen in some kind of overt way this house, maybe it was all the repression that... See, this had been a house, Grove House and Stillman House, had been set up by Mark Mankoff as a student theme house with real structure about women lived on one floor, men lived on another floor, nobody could be in each other's rooms and all that kind of stuff. So maybe there's some, I don't know what it was. But it seemed to me that sexuality in some ways flourished the first year people moved into this house, and there was a lot of awkwardness to it. Things got a lot less soft, like the first 4 years in Whitmer House, there was a lot of sensuality and massage and care for people. And it was really appreciated, that was appreciated. There's all kind of hanky-panky like there always is, except it wasn't such a big deal. But when people moved in this house, it became more like Stanford, I guess, or something, I don't know what it was. There was somebody who was here for years, literally, a man named Kim McCall, who lived in that house and then lived in this house. He was a Mormon who did his Mormon service, got married, and got divorced and moved back. And he may even still be around, but he's somebody who lived in the two different contexts. You see, I became an advisor here. I know I never lived here. But I watched that the theme got confusing. Part of what it was is it seemed that Stanford students didn't understand the appropriateness of having a history to work with. The only models you really had were the kind of models of oppression. That is, that you had expectations. If you had a lineage to work with, or a history, or a heritage to work with, it was like ground rules. You're supposed to figure out the ground rules and how to carry them on. As compared to understanding that there was, in fact, lineages here that you could draw upon. I mean, why I kept encouraging visitors to come through who I knew. I mean, and those pieces of paper you have out there from the stuff you carried, I still know where all those students are. I mean, the ones who are in here. One guy was the man who opened up the first Korean news for the West, a guy named Frank Green, the freshman.
Oh, yeah.
He did that. Julie Mathai, who was one of the most active social butterflies I'd ever seen, is now a well-known lesbian economics professor at Wesleyan College. Two of the other women are lawyers now. One's a doctor. I mean, and the fact is, none of them are particularly socially active. I mean, one of the things that I've learned as a teacher here is that with rare exceptions, most of the people are the same people their parents were. And I say that for whatever it's worth. I don't really know what to do about it because historical times have changed. But very few people sustain their efforts. These are the people from the first 4 years who really took on a lot of risk. We're talking about the same pre-med student that you may be, took on things that could have jeopardized them being able to get into medical school. And people were in engineering, got to keep up with other people and so on. But there was that sense of excitement of experimentation. We were the ones who convinced the university, apparently it's been rescinded now, but to give us that area near the faculty club for gardening. We would do it by saying to the university, nothing's going on there, and we want to build gardens. And then we were so successful, we had so many zucchinis, we actually had a ceremony in the fall to ask the zucchini guy to stop giving us zucchini.
That's by the faculty club.
That's right. You know the swimming pool out there?
Uh-uh. Oh, out by Straw.
Oh, that's that? Right. Straw, yeah. Right.
There's a swimming pool
Without
out there.
Line, yeah.
That's right. Those are all plots, and we got, see, one of the more oppressed people on this campus are graduate students. And Escondido Village was terrible, man. It took, just terrible. So we negotiated that the Escondido Village people should have access to gardens there as well as the co-ops. And it was interesting that we got a lot of graduate school interest that a group of people who were winning something would think about letting somebody else win with them. It just wasn't Stanford-like. That we could have jeopardized what we were doing by asking for other people to join in with us. And we saw a number of people who became intrigued over time because it became obvious that there really was an experiment we were trying to live out. It wasn't a particular form, that is, it wasn't a singular thing we were doing. But we were trying to figure out how to have cooperative relationships on campus. Then, you see, we set up these studies. I got a Danforth scholarship to start that. I brought one of the world's best-known educators organizers, the man from the Highlander Center in Tennessee, where Rosa Parks had been, Martin Luther King had been, Miles Horton. He came out here, and we brought 25 faculty to Assiniboine. The agreements with Peace Studies is that no class could be taught by a single professor, had to be jointly taught. That every class had one of the portions of the grade had to be the class grading how the class did, so everybody took consequences about how the class did. What you found when I was still teaching here in this house, they were all academic classes to the social thought program, which has now been chopped out. We had 135 professional athletes taking a course on athletics and social change. That means that when the Coleman Bay student came in, they saw human beings that they hardly ever saw in any other context. We taught the men, 135 professional athlete men, were given the slideshow for pelvic self-exam by women as a way of understanding how women felt they were not in contact with their bodies through the medicine. And it was given to a group of men who felt the same thing and never knew what they had in common with women, because men athletes, obviously, are always being jacked around physically as well. And so that was part of the context here, is that there were experiments going on all the time. I taught a course for women athletes, and there would be big debates between women who call themselves athletes and people who call themselves dancers and cheerleaders and pom-pom girls about them wanting to be in a class for athletes, and the women who were athletes saying they weren't athletes, and all that discussion about socialization. And they'd be arguing in the big lounge, and therefore the Coleman Bay people could see seminars they weren't participating in. But we had it here, not because we couldn't have had a classroom. I used to have those big debates with the various deans who wanted to say, why don't we legitimize you, David? Why don't you teach in a real classroom? I said, well, who wants to be in a real classroom? But you see, what I'm trying to say to you is that a number of things happened that created a context here and a culture here that led to the obvious when people would come over. If it's not here, man, hey, it's not obvious. So what you end up feeling is like proselytizers or people who are pushing against things and so on. So my suggestion is that in some ways you've got to decide if you really want to live. You've got to decide if you can distinguish the difference between believing and studying, experimenting, exploring, and living. And that if that becomes truly interesting to you, then I can help, and other people can help, how to put it in a context to show that it's about nonviolence as it's understood around the world, which is not being something. It's understood as ahimsa and satyagraha, as in the initiating of a certain quality of spirit that allows one to discover ways of having various kinds of harmonious relationships, whatever they may be. Which is why we brought Aikido in here and Tai Chi in here. Somebody said, well, I don't think any form of violence is nonviolence. And somebody said to you, I agree with you. And then we'd say, well, why don't we do Aikido? And they said, well, I don't understand. You just said violence. And they said, right, but what does that have to do with Aikido? And somebody says, well, somebody's going to hit you, and you're going to do something about it. And we had discussions about, well, is that violence? And we talk about various biblical traditions, like the word discipline from the Old Testament simply means following the obvious. And a disciple was one who just did the obvious. It didn't have anything to do with contracting your energy and not doing something else. We talked about various traditions. We brought Christians in and Buddhists in and this and that. And there was a continual sense of exploring something, not believing in something, but exploring different serious individuals in this world experiment. Why we brought people in from different cultures is it really is a world experiment. People about very serious. So when we said about violence, we brought Japanese people in here. And we do some Aikido with people from the old tradition. And then we brought George Pegelin. He used to teach karate here. And he'd tell us how he thought from his understanding of the Chinese karate, it wasn't violent either, as he was hitting this and doing that and stuff. And people were grappling with it. And they were experimenting. And they were testing to find out what it was like.
What do you see has changed in terms of the context to make, to have that feeling of experimentation just been so lost over the years? Was there one year when a whole bunch of Kalamban people just graduated and then there was just a vacuum that wasn't filled the next year? Or
as I said, moving to this house seemed to change things. It became more social than it ever had been before. And people who had come, see, it was interesting, there were numbers of people from Kalamban who moved here. But they're all the people who used to watch what was going on more than do it. Then they were thrust in the position of being leaders, and they were scared, I think. And they continued to do things, but they felt a lot of burden. See, we didn't feel any burden. When you're creating stuff, you're not feeling burdened. You're busy doing it. So my sense is the first couple of years here, as I mentioned to you earlier, there was less maturity. That is, the people... What else can I say here? Less people took classes. I had my classes increased, actually, over a few year period of time, and they were principally non-house classes, where I got some kind of legitimacy on the campus. We taught courses called Class and Ethnic Perspectives of Conflict. And essentially it was to talk with non-white students, principally, about different ethno-perceptions of violence. And we talked essentially about the amount of mind-fucking that went on at Stanford, and how people thought San Jose State was violent, but Stanford wasn't, and where does more of the damage come from? Or we talked about what Stanford did as an institution to people. And these things, students from all over campus took these things, and the people started to pull back. I think in part it had to do with my personality as well, and that I was the principal lineage left, and it was easier, I think, for people to be around me than it was to take the classes, because in the other house, it had all fit in. And now there wasn't as much dynamism on campus. And I think personally, I'm reflecting on it now, it was easier for people out of the house to take the seminars because they took it academically. They didn't feel that they had to do anything afterwards, whereas people ran to me in the halls, they'd always look at me and say to me, oh shit, I'm not really doing anything, you see. And my sense is that I was just kind of an example where a number of people began to feel too much expectation for 1 year. And then things kind of settled down. Now things started to resurrect themselves during the South Africa stuff again. This is long ago. We're talking maybe 75, 76, whatever it was. We're talking 10 years ago now. But whatever it is, once that resurrection took place, it didn't seem to come out of the same depth of context. Then it became a bit more brittle, the way most social political things happen. So all of a sudden, they were acting in ways they thought were appropriate, but it didn't have all this kind of, you're an artist, you know, the kind of nuances and milieu with it. So it got more strident internally. It seemed to me that had less dimensionality. It didn't resonate as much. And therefore, what I watched over time, now this is just my opinion, the other stuff supposedly facts, that everything started to have more narrowness, like the cooking. Maybe people have fun this year cooking, but when I'd come, people didn't have a whole lot of time. They weren't having fun cooking, and they didn't take a lot of care. And maybe they're doing that this year. That's great. I'm not suggesting people do that because they're good people or bad people. But when you do a few things regularly in your pattern of life when you're in Stanford University that are healthy, it'll help you. If you don't, you're going to turn out just like Stanford University, except you always feel a little alienated, but you'll be just like... See, we try to develop actual activities that the very nature of the activity itself created certain phenomena. And I've studied martial arts for years, and when I started, one of my teachers said, is Juan did when I knew him, he said, just shut up and do certain things. And if you do them often enough, they itself start to feed you. You don't figure out why. In fact, they're not even the things you're supposed to figure out why. Just shut up and do them. You see, and there were things that we did in Colombe that we just shut up and did. And they began to feed back to us. Like, I'm not sure how often you hold hands here quietly before you do something. You know, or what it means when you have a meeting, if there's some confusion, to actually have quiet. That means people settle down and get quiet before they go to the next step. And we would bring Hopis in, and we would bring Quakers in, and we'd bring other people in who would simply try to explain what they're doing. And we'd say, well, don't explain. Tell us what you're doing, we'll just do it with you. And we'll be able to get some feel of what you're doing, and we'd come with a consensus. And that was the other thing. There was a breakdown in the understanding of consensus. We understood that consensus was never agreeing. It was the willingness to live out an agreement, which is really different. It's when something has risen to become apparent in the community, and everyone says that this decision is one we're going to carry forth on, even if various of us have different opinions about it, see the consequences of it, and then raise it later on after we watch the consequences. It has nothing to do with agreement. It has to do with the ability to live out something. So what I began to see is that things started to get separate in the community here. There were some who would call this, and some who called that, and some who ran fast here. And there was no activity, even though everybody cooked, or everybody cleaned, the fashion in which you did it changed dimensionality to it. So you can see that at dance classes. You go someplace, some people are doing their exercises. You just feel, you know, as soon as they're finished with the exercise, they're going, you know, this got no richness to it, no vitality, no life to it. Well, my sense is that it's not useful to compete with the university unless you all decide that starting next semester you want to have a vitality that then you can say, we have gone through various vicissitudes. Obviously, we're doing well. We've been here for 17 years, man. 17 years. You understand
the tradition? You expected me here that long when you were in starting this thing out?
Of course, man. See, I've been in Asia almost all my life. You know, I work in Bali, Indonesia. And my godson, who's here with me now, he goes to the Claremont Colleges. He'll come home tomorrow. And when I'm with his village, they've lived in the same house, in the same compound for 850 years. So what I'm suggesting is, and I'm happy to put a little time in, but I'm not around much, I travel more, but I can help connect other people who can be outside facilitators with you all, not for you or to you, but with you. If you decide that you want to reestablish certain richness in some of the things you do, and then I think you have a strong argument to the administration, which is, we have been around a long time and we still have a vibrancy. All institutions go up and down, just like Stanford goes up and down. Just like Stanford Hospital is moving its quarter of the acre, quarter of the mile, but that there has been a tradition here. And there have been hundreds of people who've been through that tradition in a variety of ways. And we perceive ourselves as a theme house because we want to study, experiment, live, and explore certain qualities that were in the context of nonviolence as we understand the nonviolence. And that there are a variety of different approaches to it. And to reiterate, therefore, some of the things we do, like cooking and cleaning, that are common to other co-ops, are different because of the context we find it in, just like the Italian thing and so on. Why don't I take some questions?
Well, something that's a concern to me and to a number of us who are trying to start some new theme houses is that they have these new guidelines, and they essentially say there's two kinds of theme houses, ethnic and academic. Academic theme houses have to have this and this and this. They have to have resident fellow, who chooses the two student theme associates, and everybody has to take a course, and all this stuff. And in a sense, they've defined something like this out of existence as something they're going to legitimate. They're going to show off to their other housing administrator friends at other universities. They're going to, tell the student body about as theme houses. And
let me make one suggestion to you on this.
Yeah.
That might be helpful to you. You know at the university that in the religion department, you are not to teach the religion you call yourself. That the academics specifically state that there has to be a separation between who you is and what you can teach. Of course, I think that's crazy as a practicing Jewish Buddhist. I go over here and all these guys are Christian to me, but they have all these distinctions that they're not really Christian. Why I say that to you is it might be useful to say that you want to be busy being something, and you know that academics separates teaching from being, just like in the academic circles. So you want your theme house to be an experiment in the study, the exploration, and the living out of experiments in nonviolence. The study does not mean academic classes. What you want to do is you want to work with and find people who actually call themselves practitioners. You know that does not meet academic standards because you know the university specifically makes you separate people who embody and people who teach. And it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. And also to make it clear that you're not a community interested in believing something. This is very important because I think that's what really Norm Robinson thinks, that this is about people believing something. That is, it may be that the people who are here have to have a certain emotional dedication to want to be interested in this. But the mystique of the house is not that you believe something, but that you're interested enough in something to experiment with it. So that it's not like a fundamentalist whatever. It's something else. Because my feeling is from watching and having known Norm since he was a graduate student that he's got these kind of notions of, that the fundamentalist true believers of any kind, and many of the people he actually associated with here when he was a younger man, were people who were real believers in this. So he may have misconstrued their vigor about their experimenting with the fact that they were trying to develop a context to work with. So I only suggest that to you as a way of...
Yeah.
And you're not going to be here. You see,
right.
It's a little silly for he and I talking because we got to talk to y'all. Mm-hmm. You're the one going to be doing whatever it is you do. And I can guarantee you people are going to smell how much of you is behind what you're saying, and they're going to smell how much of the human beings here are behind it. And just don't fool yourselves. You have to nurture your own community, so when you come, you're truly the outgrowth of something. If you're not, they'll sense it right away. And if you are, they'll sense it right away. And I think you have a lot going for you. I think there are numbers of people in the outside world. If there's any sense that Colon Bay will be closed for what doesn't appear to be great reasons that they can justify, I can help solidify lots of different input to indicate that this has a long heritage, and a number of Stanford people want to see this experiment continue. You were going to ask something?
No.
What?
It seems to me this year, I lived in Colon Bay for 3 months 2 years ago, and then I live here now. And I feel a real difference that makes me feel great when we're cooking dinner. There is a big difference this year. Mm-hmm. I've noticed a lot of times when there's one or two people cooking and a lot of people flood in and all help, and it's very much about enjoying the process of it together. And that really is different from the way it was before, and it's great. And it seems like that's the sort of change that would be good to strive for, but there's a problem in calming down from the fast pace of academics and kind of walking into the house and shedding some of that running feeling that you have all the time.
Yeah.
And slowing down and really being every minute where you are.
Then you have your experiment. That's why the house was called experimental.
Yeah.
Most cultures have rituals. In this culture, we get all frightened if you use the word ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, man, academics is filled with rituals. I can't even begin to describe to you what it looks like to walk into a classroom at Stanford as compared to being in the field in these different countries, where it looks like everyone's performing a ritual. You don't think you are, but you are.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the exciting things is for you to articulate to your brothers and sisters around that you'd like to experiment for a while of what can help debrief you. What are the things that you can do? You could make an archway where when you walk through it, you agree to do certain, there's a variety of things. Then you start to get the flavor of what you're experiencing numbers of other people feel in common. So there's some solidarity from that. Then the experiment, regardless if you like the experiment or not, you do buy into the fact that the phenomena you're dealing with is one that you also feel. You say, well, that's great. You do that one, but I like to do this one. Then it doesn't matter which one you're doing. That's what we're talking about. That's the old tradition here. It's saying the particular doesn't matter. I don't need you to do it the way I do, but we'll all learn something. And one of the enjoyments of the experiment is you don't have an opportunity very often to learn from your brothers and sisters. You don't want agreement. You want to see how somebody else in their own idiosyncratic ways dealing with the same one you're dealing with. So if you feel that this rushing is something your brothers and sisters have in common, say, good, let's try to bring it up a little bit more to consciousness and try some different approaches. And one will fit you, and one will fit you, and that's fine.
I get a sense, though, that there isn't that willingness to experiment. But in certain individuals, yes, it does, but as a house, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can say, okay, we're going to experiment with not, try this new thing out, like not eating with utensils or something, or eating with our fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are always like two or three people, oh, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's okay, that's their thing, but that's just one example of just people who don't want to have to deal with the energy required
mm-hmm.
for experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how
to... problems.
How to deal with that.
Well, the university knows how to deal with it.
Yeah.
They set up a structure where you don't have to do that. So they call a theme house an extension of what happens in the classroom. It's not because they're bad people. They're not bad people doing this. They're trying to figure out systematically how to keep the subtleties of something going, not knowing that they're killing you. Remember a few years ago, a friend of mine had some teenagers, and they got all these old pulses up of acid. I think myself, I remember back in the 60s, where I was doing that stuff. And I realized whatever it is those kids are looking at, it's not anything like we were looking at it. And it's not because they're bad kids. It's just that they got... imagine what it's like to walk down the street and see everybody you see in bright psychedelic colors laughing and talking to each other, which was a certain context, a historical era that your parents may have talked to you about. And when I'm in Nepal, everybody you see says namaste. They're not embarrassed to say namaste. They don't think to themselves intellectually, this is the 60th person I said namaste to. They just say it.
What did they say?
Namaste. Just go with God. Mm-hmm. And there, it was a different era. you know, where people do that. So you got these guys, Norm Robinson, who never did any of this stuff himself. He's always an observer, who's now in a position of trying to keep certain things alive, in his opinion, I suspect. And so he's trying to figure out, having never experienced it himself, how to develop a system in his own mind that allows them to sustain themselves. So he's not a bad man. It's just that I wish there had been somebody else who actually done it, who was trying to figure out how to keep it alive. See, but what you're saying is really true. There's certain qualities you have to embody to pull it off. You need some agreements. You need to be able to say, when you do your recruiting, what you'd like. And the difficulty is, on an academic campus, when you tell people what you like, they're going to think, just like you are, it's regulations again, and yes, requirements. You guys have been applying to colleges and applying to scholarships and applying again in that class. And it's very hard to tell a bunch of people that's not what you're talking about. See? And that comes with your artfulness, where you figure out how to help through recruiting. And we talked about this a few years ago when it looked like the house was diminishing in number. We talked about what it means not to be angry that people weren't moving in, but to decide that you're going to start going to the dormitories and talk with people about why you like Colombay. And not try to lay your trip on somebody else, and not try to convince anybody. Just try to communicate. And that if 20 of you did that over a sustained period of time, there's a chance 10 other human beings eventually would come. It's when you think your time's too valuable for that, or you get pissed that your brother and sister students don't listen. You see, and during the anti-war movement, the very best of the students I ever had were the ones who made popcorn in the dormitories and talked to students. They were the ones who understood that's the way you get it done. There are no shortcuts. No shortcuts. And when, if there are 15 people in the house or there are 10 people in the house who want that kind of quality, then you must agree with each other to take the time to find people who you can communicate with. And remember, they're not that different from you out there, but you need to find contact for them. And you say, this is what we're doing, this is why we want to do it, and let me tell you about why I'm there. And somebody says, well, I don't like this. Or somebody says, well, I'll feel the pressure. And I'll feel like I'm becoming part of a cult. You know, and you look at the dormitory with all these fucking doors looking exactly alike, and everybody going to the bathroom the same way, and everybody carrying the same books, and you say to them, well, you know, let me talk to you about cults. You know, and it's not putting them down. It's not meant to put them down. It's meant to give them a perspective, because you're not embodying that particular perspective down. But I think what you're saying is the most essential thing. If you can't get a critical mass that's interested in developing this gestalt, then it becomes very difficult. And I know some of the people in the house now, and I think that those people are not interested in anything but something familiar to themselves. And that won't be helpful to you. I mean, that's what Synergy was for years. It was a group of people who developed a familiar relationship with each other, lived up there, and I think they lived a good life. They didn't have any theme. There was anything they were experimenting on, except it made sense because at Stanford, just learning to get along with each other seems like an experiment to me. No, I don't mean that as a put down, you know. I mean, there's a lot of things. I remember how outdated I felt when I went up there a few years ago, and they're all with these balloons with some kind of gas. Yeah. And I couldn't even figure out what they were doing. I felt like I was like thousands of years old. I couldn't figure out why they were walking around with balloons. I thought they couldn't figure out how to tie them up or something. You know, until somebody explained to me what was going on. But the thing was, the community itself liked what they were doing. When I was here, they had that in terms of the Zap House. Here's a house in the cow cut. Is there still a Zap House?
Yeah.
Is that right? See, you're talking about long term. Is it still a house that just flies?
It's just a house.
Yeah, just generic, I think.
Oh, that's it.
Well, it is a self thought.
It's a self thought. Kind of. See, in my mind, Colombay is in a very different relationship to its environment, cultural environment, in that Colombay, in a sense, was sort of spontaneously merging out of what was going on in people's lives when it started. Now, it really, I mean, Colombay, I don't think, would spontaneously emerge out of what's going on now. So in a sense, what it is it's a organism that's sort of culturally transmitting itself, and people are discovering certain ideas, a whole realm of thinking, things to think about that, in a sense, are disjoint from what else, you know, everything you see, look around here, and it puts you into a different position, different stance, and so in a lot of ways, the question in my mind is, can a theme which is essentially being culturally transmitted by the people in this house survive? And the regulations for theme houses are very top down. It's definitely not meant to be cultural transmission, but you know, sort of constant infusion from above. When Column Bay was started, did the house have decisions over whether there would be a resident tutor or not?
We had all decisions. All decisions were ours.
You didn't have to jump through any hoops.
None.
Except paying your bills and.
Right, and we paid them so well and so quickly that we had advocates in the most reactionary offices. People were pushing for Column Bay. Mm-hmm. It helped a lot.
It seems that the perception of Column Bay, from what I know in general at Stanford, is very much different from what you describe as an experiment. It's much more of a
Haven.
60s leftover house, is what some people have called it. And it's primarily associated with anti-war. And I think what you were saying, and Jimmy and I were talking about this on Saturday at lunch, the fact that peace is seen as a static, state.
An absence
of war. It's
not
a verb, and it's not an active thing, is really something that we should work at changing, because I think that would be a key to making us appear to other people as an experiment and showing the activeness of this house, and it's not a going against, which I think is what turns most people off. I'll never forget freshman year, when I decided to live here, and it was spring quarter, and I was in line for salad with someone behind me. He was an ROTC person. And I picked up the tongs and put my salad in my bowl, and then it was his turn, and he looked up and he said, I'm not taking salad from a bowl with a communist anti-war person who's going to live at Column Bay. I thought, oh boy, God, the perception is really far from what I thought it was. You know? And it seems that if we're going to do some dorm outreach, that would be what we could focus on, is just showing the active process of it instead of just referring to all of those categorizations that people have set up and that are so convenient and easy to deal with concepts with.
I think what you say is very true. It has to also be alive.
Yeah.
That is, what you talk about has got to be real for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find context to put it.
Well, this kind of ties in with what Scott was saying too, that there's not, there probably is not critical mass in that sense. And what I've felt in the 3 years that I've been involved here is that what happens, because there aren't, enough people who have that kind of experimental attitude, because there aren't enough of those people, then the people who do have that attitude get caught in this web of feeling that they shouldn't do things because everyone has to be able to agree to it before we can move on. And so people continuously stifle themselves from taking any action because they feel like, well, if the whole house doesn't agree to it, then it's not consensus and we can't do it. And it seems to be like a circle that can't be gotten out of for some reason.
Well, if you saw yourselves more as a tribe right now, where the tribe is having difficulty remembering its traditions, you spend more time internally. You slow it down, and you try to find out how you can enhance richness, the sensation of richness. If it means that weekends become more elaborate cooking rather than less elaborate cooking, you say, all right, food's important to us, we enjoy the making of it. Let's see if we can have every other, whatever, Saturday or Sunday, time where we bring friends and we show off the house. People. We take that time to cook. Maybe we even take time to invite some people to cook with us. What we do is we develop warmth and care in ways that we think are essential to nonviolence. And we also try to show that we don't mind, in fact, we are delighted with differences of opinion. You know, we want to be able to show people what we think is essential to peace in the world. The differences of opinion principally figure out how to live with each other and how to deal with the conflict as compared to everyone having to agree with each other and becoming homogenous. The other is clearly you need some outside guidance. You need some real practitioners who will spend some time with you. and to do nothing but to enjoy each other, to actually communicate as companions the different experiments you're running. Might be nice to have a bit more to do with VIA. Why don't you see if you can get some, in a more systematic way, talk to Paul, the director now, Mr. Wright's off and gone, if maybe VIA would allow you to send some things out to some of the recent returnees who are coming back to school here. To see if you can get some of the people who've been in different cultures come and visit and talk a little bit about how other cultures deal with certain issues, like how they get along with, how they deal with conflict, or how they deal with education separate from the school systems, or, and start to recognize that this is an experiment that's difficult in this culture, but it's very unusual and healthy because it does what a lot of other cultures are already struggling with. So you reach out to people who are not academics about it, who come back with some heart. You know, they'll have been in Japan or Korea or Indonesia or someplace, and they'll say, great, it's great that people come, they want to hear some of what I'm feeling. I mean, so one of the things you can do is just slow it down and do more internal things that develop that level of richness with each other.
I'm actually working on that.
Mm-hmm.
I went.
But I think you need to be practical as soon as possible. Maybe that you want as many of you who can come back as soon as you can, rather than later. And take some time walking around the physical facility after you've been gone a couple of days, I mean a couple of weeks. See if there's a particular place you want to start to embellish, you want to work with. If you're going to have some new people coming in, to actually agree to take some time with them. They don't have to agree to take time with you, you can agree to take time with them. Not have them come to meetings, but two of you say to that person, we're going to spend some time with you. We want to make sure you meet people in the house. We want to find out what kind of interests you have. We want to find out if some of those things that we can do more cooperatively here. And somebody says, shit, I don't want that. And they say, I'm stuck with this house, but I don't want that. You say, well, you got a problem, because we're going to stick with you for a while. Mm-hmm. See, in some ways, you just be present. See, and try to learn to communicate that way. But you're obviously going to have to deal with Norm Robinson soon. Mm-hmm. The only thing I want to suggest to you is, while you're doing your experiment, please remember that you have a great deal of outside assistance. That he's going to have to figure out a reason to do away with something that, without any national affiliation like these fraternities, something has stayed alive this long. And you've got to figure out how to put the burden on him. You've got to be able to get him to recognize the number of people who are going to want to know what good excuse does the university have for stopping something that sustained itself this long, even if it's gone through vicissitudes, because all things go through vicissitudes.
I have a conjecture about what may be coming. There's a bunch of theme houses up for, you know, as proposals for approval, and they'll want to put him in somewhere, and they'll say, look, Colin Bay has had for a number of years had trouble filling, and you know, it's clear that you can't force people to be in this house that don't want to be, and you know, here we have all these people that are really interested in this new theme house, and what have you, we just can't continue to support you when you don't have student interest. And
I think that's a fair thing to say, and then your response would be, you can't do that overnight. Have they said to you, have they given you a year notice and saying to you X, Y, or Z?
No, there was just a disconcerting quote of Norm Robinson's in the newspaper where he said, you know, Terra Synergy and Column Bay used to be theme houses. Also, it's not bad that themes come and go, their times come and go.
Norm can come and go. So my sense is that you ought to deal with them straight on right away. Tell them that you're concerned about this. If in some ways he's trying to give you a notice, you'd like to have it more done more formally, because there are a number of people you'd rather gather together to understand with almost no notice he's questioning this. You got to turn around in some fashion. So he understands that the real consequences he's going to take. But I think that's the least of your problems. Your real important problem is maybe he's accurate. Mm-hmm. You see, that's the real question.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned when I talk to Byron Bland, who's a good man, and he's confused about some of the things the House does as being substantive. He's a man I trust. And if he's confused, then you guys are confusing. It's fine. I'm not worried about being confusing. A lot of things are confusing nowadays. Doesn't mean you can't dust off your skirts and get it together, you know, and use this dynamic as a way to do that. But I have to promise you, there are no shortcuts to certain things. You have to take some time. So you have to decide you're willing to take some time. If it touches you, then it won't feel like taking a lot of time. It'll feel like something you're enjoying doing. And that's a decision you'll have to make. In that sense, you're no different from the draft resistance of years ago or in anything else. This is very real. You have to make personal decision to put time and effort in, and you have to make personal decision about how to do it collectively. So even though you do things individually, you have a way of coming back to each other to gain the strength of working cooperatively and collectively with each other. That will take some quiet understanding on your part of what you're willing to put your time into.
Something that's hard for me to understand is
the nature of these times. And it seems like people are getting sucked back into standard ways of thinking about things. And that people are not putting up much resistance to that. And that so that people, somebody who's in control of a way of describing something has a hell of a lot of power, and everybody else, students are, I just feel like, are just getting tossed this way and that way.
Doesn't seem like you have any problem understanding. I think you said it very nicely.
Yeah.
I think you just don't like what you see.
Yeah, no, I don't like that at all.
No, but understand that it's two different things. I think you describe something very well. You don't have any problem.
Okay.
You just don't like it.
Well, but I don't understand why that is. What is it, and what do you do about it?
Yeah, what do you do about it?
It's interesting, most other cultures are not so self-reflective. They try to figure out what to do, not why they're doing it. And one of the things is, we talked about richness in the house. You got to do things that feel rich. And the only way you do that is do some things and see if they feel rich. And that means bumbling around and trying some things and wasting, in quotes, time or not wasting time. You just do it. Like one of the reason I talked about holding hands before a meal or after a meal is that has a lot of intimacy to it. If a number of the people in the house can't tolerate that, that tells you something. It tells you you've got a long way to go before people are willing to actually have the connectedness of being community. That people are scared of that. When they're scared of it, you can't tell them to sit down and hold hands. You have to do certain things that allow people to become more willing to have their parameters penetrated. So in the old days, people were raping or pillaging us right and left. So you didn't feel assaulted if somebody wanted to reach out to you. You were just delighted to have somebody reach out and be a community. Yeah, people were going to take you to Vietnam. People were going to give you ridiculous classes that you didn't want to study because you really knew what you wanted to study. It wasn't being given here. And people wanted to move you here and there and blah, 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 blah. Nowadays, everything's kind of quieted down, so in some ways, intimacy appears to be assaulting. Or doing things cooperatively seems to be disorienting. And I think it's useful. I think it's very useful. If you can embody it, then mention to the resident Ed that embodiment and experimenting can't be systematized.
Yeah.
It might be that you talk to this guy's name in anthropology.
Durham?
Another guy who works a lot with American Indians.
Rick?
No. George would be nice to know. There's another guy who works in medicine and anthropology. Cliff?
Oh, Cliff.
Barnett. Yeah, Cliff Barnett. Spindler's a good friend. You can talk to the Spindlers as well, but they're not here very often because they're on sabbatical. But Cliff Barnett or some other anthropologists, and present yourself as a culture having difficulty. That would be very interesting. You are a 17-year-old culture at Stanford University. You want to find out what kind of suggestions they have, and will they come in alignment with you? Will they give you some guidance, and will they help talk academic language about what it means to have sustain this? There's much more culture here than the other places because they didn't have the same amount of grounding to start with. Synergy didn't have any grounding, and Terra House never had any. But I do think you need to get here early and settle down and look at the house with as fresh eyes as possible about this is your home. When I was teaching here, I taught a course only for American Indians about how to sustain cultural values by dealing with the dominant culture. We were having a debate one day where this woman who was living in Robley was angry that they were going to spend money a certain way. This guy said, well, what do you care about? It's only their money. She says, no, it's my home. I said, that's crazy. It's not your home. She says, well, my tradition, wherever I live, is my home. And so she took everything very seriously the way she would her home. Well, this other American Indian was arguing with her that she was dumb to take a dormitory as home because it would hurt her. She said what will hurt her is if she doesn't take it as her home. And they had very different points of view, both of which were legitimate, but very different perceptions about how to survive at Stanford, of what was a cultural compromise and what was not. That was the point of the seminar, is to allow people in some kind of context to compare things. Because it was called a course, they had the context. They weren't supposed to leave with an agreement. Their agreement was that they'd be in context to discuss this stuff. That's all Colombia's got to be. It's an agreement to develop, experiment, and try out within a certain context. Not a linear way of doing it, not a singular way of doing it.
It's interesting, the language of the new theme house guidelines, they're always talking about responsibility, fulfilling your obligations. Being
that's from Kennedy, man. I mean, he's got this post. It's not a book on Kennedy at all. I mean, anybody who tries to set up a large structure, he wants students to remember they have public service to do. They have certain responsibilities. Mm. You're going to be white, fat, and happy when you're older. You should be doing this when you're younger. I mean, it's a very old perception of life. But even that got lost. You know, so I can, you know, I'm just trying to let you know, if the leader sniffs and somebody else tells you to take a prescription, they're trying to talk about responsibility. The point is, you obviously have been very responsible because it's been together all these years. Obviously a whole lot more responsible than a lot of those fraternities. I mean, you still have a physical facility. You have stuff from the 70s, mid-70s that you carry on that people are still looking at. I mean, you have a lot of stuff you can show as lineage. But what I'm concerned about is it's not worth your time unless you're going to make it real now. Otherwise, you can say, thanks, Norm. You reminded us of something that we had forgotten. We really aren't alive anymore. And shuffle off. You've got to decide how important this is. And that's what I'm trying to say to you. In this sense, you are exactly the way the house began. Individual decisions must be made. And then people must act upon those things in some kind of cooperative, collective fashion. In that sense, you're no different from most other cultures who are going through all kinds of transitions. I've been to 60 or 70.